Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim joins us by phone today, but we still have good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, the big story from Virginia nationally this week, of course, was the stunning upset in the primary of House Majority Leader Eric Cantor. But another story out of Richmond is pretty good news, no matter what Republican stripe you align with. And that's the big debate that's been going on over the state budget. The Democrats have the governor's office with Terry McAuliffe. The Republicans, by a wide margin, control the state House of Delegates. The state Senate had been tied with a Democratic lieutenant governor breaking those ties. However, recently, a Democratic state senator officially resigned to take a job that he now no longer wants to take, which means the Republicans have a one-seat majority. There had been this huge impasse over the budget because McAuliffe wants to expand Medicaid within the budget negotiations. Republicans don't want to do that, and they certainly don't want to do it in the budget negotiations. So yesterday, the state legislature, both chambers, not only passed a budget, which had they not, they would have gone to a government shutdown at the beginning of July, but they specifically included language that said that Terry McAuliffe cannot unilaterally expand Medicaid as part of this budget. So well played in short order by Virginia state Republicans.
Yeah, and for anybody who's ever said, oh, the problem with Republicans is that we're too nice, we don't play hardball, we're not willing to really pull out all the stops and use every possible tactic in order to win, the Democrats are much more ruthless than we are, and we lose because we're too kind and gentle. Here is your example, and we, you know, this is something that, look, they got a Democratic state senator to accept a job on the State Tobacco Commission. That is, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, look, it's kind of a cushy government job, and it's a nice appointee position. It's intriguing. This is one in which you're set up by Republican legislators appoint you to this part of the commission. But basically, they managed to get somebody to give up his, state Senate seat for another job. And if every Democrat wants to scream bloody murder, I'm sure they vehemently opposed the nomination of Max Baucus to be our ambassador to China, because that happened about a couple months ago. Max Baucus, by his own description, knows nothing or not much about China, but who got the position because he was representing Montana. He was about to retire. The Republicans had a really good chance of winning the seat, so they decided to give the Democratic nominee, John Walsh, a leg up and to say, all right, well, we'll have you resign. We'll appoint him to the position, and he can run as a quasi-incumbent and, you know, run as Senator Walsh running for re-election instead of, you know, just some guy running as a Democratic ticket in a pretty deep red state. And that's all legal. You know, the president's allowed to appoint whatever ambassadors he wants. If he wants to do it for some political maneuvering, he's free to do it. Here we see a very similar bit in Virginia. If you want to argue, we shouldn't be doing these sorts of nominations, and that nominations should be done for the merits, and we shouldn't use these things to try to get some partisan advantage. Okay, fine. You guys go first. You know, there certainly was a lot of angry coverage in the Washington Post and other, you know, Northern Virginia press that this is some sort of unthinkable turn of events. I guess it's only unthinkable and horrible when Republicans do it, huh, Greg?
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, the states having the option of Medicaid expansion was really the only win that conservatives got out of the Obamacare Supreme Court decision. So now the effort, of course, on the part of Democrats is to paint anybody who opposes states expanding Medicaid as heartless and hating children and poor people and so forth. So Virginia Republicans perhaps putting forward a good template here.
Yeah, and, you know, and really, you know, willing to fight the good fight. When I was seeing, you know, a whole bunch of other states, a bunch of Republican governors who are usually pretty conservative, really, oh, God, I don't want to get accused of being mean to the poor and all that stuff and surrendering. So these guys are digging in their heels, even when it's not the easiest of issues to fight on.
All right. Well, on to the bad martini, and it continues to be the same bad martini we've had for the last couple of days, and that's the quickly unraveling situation in Iraq. These radicals from ISIS, the Islamic group related to Iraq and Syria, trying to put together this whole regional caliphate system, seemingly marching into Baghdad at this point. The Iraqi military melting faster and faster each moment here. And now, Jim, just in case we didn't have enough issues on our plate as it relates to all of our gains seemingly vanishing in Iraq, now the Iranians want to team up with us to help roll it back. They haven't actually floated anything specific, the Obama administration not reacting to it, but an Iranian official telling Reuters, we can work with Americans to end the insurgency in the Middle East. The Iranians not saying exactly what they would contribute other than to say that they would not be contributing any troops. They would be giving, I guess, some weapons and maybe some money, but it's hard to tell whether we give it to them or the Iranians give it to them. Who's actually going to use any of those weapons since they don't have much of a military left anymore? And what exactly this partnership would look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that allegedly Shia men are signing up to join the military ranks around Baghdad as the ISIS gets closer. We shouldn't be that surprised by this. And in fact, this may, in the not-too-distant future, begin resembling the circumstances of Syria, in which we have an Iran-backed ruler who is threatened by Islamist extremists who are largely Sunni. And, you know, it's one of those things where there's a certain philosophy that says, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I think that can sometimes be very erroneous. I don't know if Iran threatening to come in should make us more eager to get involved in this or less. My suspicion is that, you know, for the administration, all of a sudden it became okay. You know, well, wait, here's our chance to work with the Iranians. And, you know, if we can work with the Iranians against ISIS, then we can build a lasting peace and all that stuff. And this is like a little bit of naive thinking there. It's also interesting that if Iran does not want us to commit ground troops, it's very intriguing whether, you know, we would, how militarily involved we want to get into. Some people kind of wondering if ISIS is going to, you know, slice right into Baghdad or whether they've gone through the relatively easy areas. And that the Shia folks, the young men around Baghdad, will be a much tougher fight for them than the largely Sunni areas that they have rolled through so far. So it is a mess. A little bit later today, the president is supposed to address the country. CNN reported just a little while ago that there is a carrier in the Persian Gulf moving closer to Iraq. So I guess the president is keeping his options open. It would be quite ironic, but I don't think that we should be breaking out the party hats and believing that, you know, because Iran and we are technically on the same side in this one, that they're any less of a threat to our interests in the long run.
Certainly. It is ironic that they're not contributing ground forces because they had no trouble contributing ground forces unofficially to target our troops. So trusting them at any point is a dangerous errand at best. But we'll see exactly how this plays out because, as many have said over the past 24 to 48 hours, there really are no good options there right now. So we'll see. All right. On to a much-needed crazy martini today. Martini number three. Jim, for folks of our generation and really multiple generations, that music just warms the heart. And as many people know, they've not allowed the original trilogy to live alone in peace. They did the prequels, which drove down the value of the franchise. And even that wasn't enough. Now they're doing episode 7, set 30 years in the future. 70-something-year-old Harrison Ford is back as Han Solo, which I think most people love the character of Han Solo. But yesterday, in a way that makes you think, maybe it's just time to step back from some of these characters constantly coming back. Harrison Ford broke his ankle and perhaps also suffered some chest injuries when he was the victim of an accident involving the hydraulic door to his own beloved Millennium Falcon. This is a very sad day in the history of the Republic.
Yeah, you know, and obviously there's a lot of debate about who is responsible, whether it was Chewie's fault. 3PO usually tends to be the scapegoat in these situations. The good news is he was taken to the medical bay, and IG-88 gave him a new ankle for tomorrow. Now I just need to get my geek on there for a moment. I have been reasonably optimistic about the sequel trilogy. I do think, obviously, the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was kind of an ominous indicator in this area. Mm. Harrison Ford is getting up in years. And as soon as they announced, oh, Han Solo is going to be back and Harrison Ford's going to play him again, the jokes about him, you know, dealing with Geritol aliens and, you know, needing to have the space age walker and stuff like that. You know, we're going from the era of having Imperial walkers to needing a walker in the Star Wars universe. So hopefully it'll turn out to be good, but kind of an ominous indicator. And we all love Harrison Ford. We all love Indiana Jones and Han Solo, but maybe it's time to pass the torch and let these new characters flourish, and hopefully this will not be too cringe-inducing the next time he has to, you know, point a finger at someone in his emphatic manner, as Harrison Ford is known to do.
Exactly right. Well,
you find that man, Greg Columbus. You find that man.
Well, I am firmly of the belief that the fourth Indiana Jones never actually happened. I refuse to.
It's a rumor. It's allegedly. It's like the Star Wars Christmas special. very hard to find. Kind of more myth than legend than actual verified fact.
As far as I'm concerned, he and his father are still riding off into the sunset after finding the Holy Grail. Sorry if anybody, I spoiled that one for anybody. But anyway, Jim.
Came out in 89. If you haven't seen it by now, you know.
It's been 25 years. You'll have to learn to live with that. Jim, have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, a great Father's Day. We'll be back on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.